On this election day, we end with a political story that has nothing to do with influencing your vote. Instead, it's a look back at our history. The city of Jackson claims a unique place in American politics, and current state's Kevin Lavery is here to explain why. It's not because the city's named for President Andrew Jackson, is it, Kevin?
No, it is not, Mark, but a good guess. 160 years ago this year, Jackson hosted what historians say was the very first convention of what was then the brand new Republican Party. It was July 6, 1854. About 1,500 people turned out to voice their opposition to the idea of extending slavery into the Western territories. To learn more about this, I turn to our trusted historian, Michigan State University Professor Roger Rosentrater, who took me back in time to a place under the oaks.
Well, it kind of all begins in the late 1840s with the Mexican War and the acquisition of additional territory in the Southwest. What happens in Michigan by the early 1850s is that we've got the Whig Party, which has been around for a while, not overly successful here in Michigan. The Democrats, who have been the dominant party ever since we became a state in 1837, there is a free soil movement as well. What happens and why we get a Republican Party is because of events that take place regarding the Kansas-Nebraska territory.
Right, because in the 1850s, the Kansas and Nebraska territories were the center of much political strife and debate about whether those two areas should be open up for slavery or to come into the Union as free states.
Actually, who we can blame if we need to blame someone would be Illinois Senator Stephen Douglas. Douglas is the chairman of the Senate Committee on Territories, and he wants to organize the Kansas and Nebraska territories so that he can see a transcontinental railroad built with an eastern terminus at Chicago. Now, Douglas is from Illinois, so that makes some sense. He also owns some real estate in Chicago and possibly would make a little bit of money in the great scheme of things. He is forced to get Southern support for this organization of the Kansas-Nebraska territories from the Southerners. And Southerners see this as an opportunity to repeal the 1820 Missouri Compromise because the Kansas-Nebraska territory would have been free of slavery. Douglas knows this is going to create a firestorm, as he claims at the time. He underestimated how much of a firestorm.
So let's go back just a couple of years. In 1852, Harriet Beecher Stowe had published Uncle Tom's Cabin. 2 years before that, in 1850, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act. So with all this going on in the background, Roger, how do we finally get to Jackson, Michigan?
It's not easy because you've got the Free Democrats, for example, who are free soil minded, who go ahead and put together their own slate of candidates in February of 1854. Then you've got the Whigs and the Free Soilers who are still out there as well. Newspaper editors, the editor of the Jackson Press, for example, Charles DeLand, and then Joseph Warren, who's the editor of the Detroit Tribune, they're both Whig papers. They're willing to say, look, let's go talk to the Free Democrats. Long story short, the Free Democrats say, look, we'll pull back our slate of candidates. And there is an argument that says we need to have a mass convention. Matter of fact, in the last days of June of 1854, a number of Michiganians, I've seen numbers that suggest as many as 10,000 Michiganians signed in a short 10 days or so, a petition saying, we need to meet. Well, that meeting is going to be held in Jackson on July 6th. And as everyone knows, there's no building large enough for the 1,500 people that show up. So as a result, they go out under the trees or under the oaks, as it were.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave.
Why would a Michigander in 1854 care about the slavery question in a territory that was 1,000 miles to the west?
That's a great question because one of the things is they felt that they had been taken advantage of, which is to say, in addition to reading Uncle Tom's Cabin, there was talk about maybe acquiring Cuba. There was talk about Central America. Filibusters were down there acquiring. So there was a lot of this slave power which is at work. And Michiganians were getting, along with a lot of other Northerners, increasingly angry at what seemed to be, I mean, here we in the North are the majority of the people in the country. We have a direction that we think the country should go, and yet the South and the slave power, as they called it, seemed to be calling all the shots. They had a president in Franklin Pierce who's from New Hampshire, but he is a doughface. He is a pro-Southerner. Everywhere they turned, it seemed like losing out. The compromise only worked if it worked for slave power people.
A doughface?
He was called a doughface, D-O-U-G-H face.
unlike doughboys in World War I.
Yes, those are positive. A doughface is a negative term for a Democrat, a Northern Democrat who has Southern leanings during the antebellum period.
We're talking with Roger Rosentrader, a historian at Michigan State University. How did it come to be then that the rest of the country learned of the news that this little town was the origin of this brand new political movement?
We were first, and it's really quite that simple. Michigan can claim the first successful attempt at what at the time was called fusion. We were bringing together all of these elements on July 6th in Jackson. It happened elsewhere throughout the North in the weeks following July 6th. Matter of fact, a week after the Michiganians met in Jackson, Wisconsin delegates met in Madison. They didn't have state elections, apparently, in Wisconsin at the time. What happened in Jackson is that they not only adopted a slate of candidates, but they also adopted the moniker Republican. There were others who talked about Republican. Horace Greeley in New York had talked about Republican at some point, but it happened in Michigan first. Happened elsewhere following us, but we were first.
There's also a small town in Wisconsin called Ripon, supposedly several months before Jackson in February of 1854. 30 or so men who opposed the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which had just been passed a month before, met in a little white schoolhouse to call for the creation of a new political party. So apparently, Ripon has got its own claim to the birthplace of the GOP.
Yeah, and I've seen the picture of the building where they met, and it says birthplace of the Republican Party. I think the important thing to remember is that there were others throughout the North who were disenchanted, and they were looking to organize. The notion that you have a slate of candidates, in the case of Michigan, four free Democrats, four Whigs, and then two other Democrats are on that statewide ticket, as it were. What happens in Michigan, as opposed to elsewhere, is that it's really well orchestrated. It's not left to chance. Everybody cooperates. They put partisanship aside, and they focus on the principle of unifying and trying to stop the advance of slavery into the Western territories.
The Republican Party gained a pretty good foothold in the state of Michigan from 1854 onward, well into the 20th century.
A great foothold, as it were. Matter of fact, they will win the 1854 election, not overwhelmingly. It's a 43,000 to 38,000 margin. The Republicans then will control Michigan right through 1932 when the Great Depression comes along and there's a considerable change in the state's outlook.
Roger Rosentrader is a historian at Michigan State University. We've been talking about the 160th anniversary in July of 1854 of the convention that is widely believed to have launched the Republican Party right here in this state, Jackson, Michigan. Roger, it's been great talking to you as always. Thanks,
Kevin.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.